And every opportunity that he had, he mentioned physicality. He mentioned he wanted the pads popping. He mentioned he wanted competition. So I think that there's some truth to the fact that he wanted Bo in there to feel that kind of the late game thing. I mean, that's where they, you know, kept pushing it with Ty Thompson, where he got that touchdown there to kind of end the game to make it look a little bit closer than it really was. But it was, I think he wanted the competition. I think this was maybe not the plan for him to play the entire game, but I think it was always going to be him deep into the fourth quarter.
And, I mean, the yellow team did have a lead in the second half. I mean, yeah. With the team with Ty Thompson at quarterback was winning. So, I mean, make of that what you will. I made a lot of it,
Shane.
I try not to take too much away from these games.
Hello and welcome to the Flock Pod. We are at hashtag 148 here at beautiful Chopper Base. The Avatari are producers. Well, one of them is actually at work today, getting that paycheck, paying for his kibble. Love to hear that. The other two are sleeping on the couch.
Wait, what?
He's not actually getting a paycheck, but he volunteers at the place that Miga goes to for work. So I wish that he was actually getting paid, but no, that's just the joke that I have with Miga, and she always listens to like the first like 10 minutes. So hopefully she'll hear this and get a crack out of things. If you'd please be so kind, go find us all on all of your major podcast streaming platforms at The Flock Pod. Hit that subscribe button. Give us the 5-star rating. Go to your local T-Mobile store or AT&T store and subscribe all of those phones for us. That would be amazing. If anybody ever does that actually for us, please send us a video on social media and we will just blow that up because that would be amazing. Also, please go find us on all of your major social media platforms, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Bookface, at The Flock Pod. You can find me at Coach Justin D on those same social media platforms. Shane, tell them where you are.
You can find me at BartenderShane6 on the Twitter and WalkerFlockShane6 on the Instagram.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a big podcast for you today. Lots and lots of duck tent to talk about. We have the spring game. We have the NFL draft. We have some ducks shining on the diamond. But first, we must cover this first here foremost. And again, this is one of those situations where I'm just going to throw the ball to Shane. I'm going to give him a little bit of an ISO situation here, just kind of clear out for him because I know he has some strong feelings, some strong opinions. The Memphis Grizzlies came out today and said, under no circumstances will we be bringing back Dylan Brooks. Shane, the floor is yours.
I just want to start with, I think the entire LeBron James, that whole series, I think it got blown way out of proportion. This is just another thing that I think is going to get blown way out of proportion yet again. And the verbiage in that, in the under no circumstances, does sound odd. It's a strange way to put it. But do we really think the Grizzlies were going to bring back Dylan Brooks had they lost that series? And yeah, if they lost that series and none of those shenanigans happen, say he doesn't catch him in the balls and all those things don't come down, and skipping the interviews after the game, I personally think is kind of whack. I don't think you should always have to talk to the interview, but or to the media. But if you're going to take on the persona, in which we all know what he was doing, he knows what he was doing, Draymond knows what he's doing. And I think when those guys kind of shun the media, I think it's a little lame, just because it's like you're playing into it. You use it as a tool to promote yourself. And then this is also how these people get paid. When something interesting happens with you and they have questions to ask and you're like, no. And then they have to go and ask Desmond Bane and he does like his nice guy act. And it's just, I don't know. It's, if you're going to create it, let it play out. But anyways.
Well, and I'm going to jump in here real quick. Yeah, not to mention you're not giving yourself any kind of an opportunity to then control that narrative, and you're pissing off the people that are going to be creating that narrative. It's like the whole don't mess with people that make your food. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like exactly. Treat them kindly because they're human also. But it is completely, completely soft. I'm going to use that word very specifically. It's very soft of him not to show up and talk to the media after creating this whole buzz spot. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big reason Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? It was how he treated the media, and they get to vote. But I mean, all of that aside, so if we're just going to talk basketball and what Dylan Brooks gets paid and what the Memphis Grizzlies are and what they're going to be, if they're going to bring back Dylan Brooks and run it back with that exact same squad, their fans are eventually going to be like, what are we doing here? Because they're going to be kind of butting their heads against the wall. So, yeah, I mean, you have expendable pieces. Dylan Brooks is obviously one of them. Steven Adams may or may not be one of them. There's probably going to be a trade that happens to shake things up and give this team a new look, because you have to do that every 3 or 4 years, unless you're the Portland Trailblazers.
Yep. Few things.
Zing.
Yes. Yeah. Seriously. A few things. They're under no circumstances was Dylan Brooks going to be a Memphis Grizzly next season, either way. Like you mentioned, I just want to double down on that. That's 100% what the situation was. He was always going to be let go and headed to free agency. The jokes have gone too far. He's not going to end up in China. He's not
going to end up in like Turkey.
He's still a good basketball player. Did he fuck up? Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. And he knows he did. And that's why he didn't show up for media. He took it too far. But I also want to reiterate here, if the Grizzlies have Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, this is an entirely a different series. This is a series that the Grizzlies are probably favored in at that point. Basketball, because you've only got five guys on the floor, is all about matchups. And when you're going up against Anthony Davis and you have your third string center out there, oh, what a coincidence. The one game that guy went off, the Grizzlies won. What a coincidence. That's so crazy.
Well, Anthony Davis is hurt so much, we forget that he's like an all-timer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But if you have Steven Adams down there beating on him, or Brandon Clark with his athleticism and his timing on the defensive side of the ball, it just completely shifts the series. So Memphis was entitled to some of that bravado because of what they accomplished during the regular season, but they weren't the same team, and they were acting like they were the same team. And this is what happens. This is what happens. And they're completely using Dylan Brooks as a scapegoat. Dylan Brooks has like RV marks all over his body just from getting run over. I mean, bus marks, whatever, the proverbial bus. Because the Grizzlies saw this as an opportunity to save face and say, okay, this is one of the big moves we're making to try to shift our culture. Maybe you need to look at the head coach as opposed to something like this, because I was really disappointed with the complete lack of adjustments and the complete lack of control he seemed to have over that roster, in particular in the last few games of that series. So that's where I would be definitely taking a look, but that's just me.
Well, I think the nucleus of that team too is just a little bit off. It's kind of like when you watch, like, even the Pelicans are healthy and you watch it, you're like, this is cool, this is awesome, regular season, but you know, it's when the rotation's tight down, the game slows down, especially when there's a cat named LeBron James involved in the game. So it gets that's when basketball becomes like its most cerebral.
Yep.
And yeah, it just didn't work out.
So I'll say Harrison Barnes, welcome to Memphis, because the Kings are going to shake some things up, and that makes just too much sense that he would get sent over there. And there's a lot of smoke about Dylan Brooks coming to Portland. Don't know how I feel about that. I really wanted it to happen a couple years ago. I don't know what role he fits in that they really need besides just the lockdown perimeter defense, in which he showed that he's not quite lockdown. I would say he's good. He's a very good perimeter defender, but he's not like somebody that you can just put on like a Kawhi or a LeBron and just say, okay, they're shut down, they're taken care of. And he's not a good enough shooter. He's not a good enough shooter to have that spacing. And I think he proved that this playoffs, unless because he's done it before. He's been a better shooter in the past. I'm not sure if he just got too deep in his head or what happened here, but I'm not sure I love the fit in Portland. How do you feel about it?
It works in a sense. I don't know. I mean, I also think that this Portland roster needs to also make some moves too. So it's like, how does he fit in with how this team looks right now? Not particularly well, but I also think that Dylan Brooks is like a 3-and-D guy. Is he one of the most elite defenders in the NBA? No. Was he at one time? You know, bordered he was like
it.
A he was like a fringe guy, but I also think that that like elite defense, usually, unless you're like one of like the best defenders of all times, is kind of like a short, you're like an NFL running back in that sense, where you have like that really athletic window. And then from there, you kind of have to be a smarter defender. Mm-hmm. And some guys are better at that longevity phase of it. But I also think that, you know, Lillard, you know, you're going to have to make Lillard happy in Portland or move Lillard. So Dylan Brooks could, you know, fall into this somewhere, but I also could see him just going to like a Detroit or just like a Houston, like a team that just needs bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. Houston's an interesting landing spot because they've said they do want to get some older guys in there to see what they can do. And
I don't know if he's like captain role model though for
No. He needs a Dame. He needs somebody like Damian Lillard to help put him in line and help focus him and take that energy and that passion that he has and then channel it, you know, just like, I mean, say what you want about Draymond, but he has a support staff of Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, some of the greatest teammates of all time that are able to put up with his bullshit. So I don't know how far Dame and how far Portland would be willing to go.
But what, my last thing on Dylan Brooks is the national media fails to realize that, like, because he does look like this kind of bad guy right now in this heel, that we know as Oregon fans, like the Dylan Brooks legend, that you are getting like a legendary work ethic guy. And I think that he is a guy who, I think that part of that heel thing was that he's like, I'm going to take some of this attention from these younger guys. And maybe like me catching a lot of shit will open it up and like let other guys get out of their headspace. So maybe it was a big team move and he could be a better teammate than the current perception, which in a couple months could be completely different.
Again, it's one of my favorite stories. I mean, they literally, while Dylan Brooks was here, they had to take his key card away because they kept finding him in the gym at like 2 a.m. just putting up shots. I mean, this kid's work ethic is absolutely legendary, and that's part of the reason why he carries such a massive chip on his shoulder. But speaking of another kid who's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder and went out there and threw the pigskin around pretty darn well this last Saturday, Shane, I don't think it's going to be any surprise that the player that I want to begin talking about here is my adopted son, Ty Thompson, who went out there and struggled at the beginning. I was the meme that Zach sent in the group chat was perfect. I was literally the sad kid. I was so sad. But then he went and totally redeemed himself and played very, very well in the second half of that game, put his team in a position to win coming back. But it's those happy feet moments, you know what I mean, that you kind of saw at the beginning of the game. It's the lack of timing at the beginning of the game that still leave me hesitant. And I know that he's not going to reach the heights that I obviously predicted for him, but still even have me asking some questions about whether he can be the starter next season or if he's going to be capable to step in and fill in this season if that time comes.
Right, because, you know, as we saw last year, injuries are always a possibility. I thought there was a couple plays that looked really promising. When he settled down in the second half, obviously he threw a couple really good balls. Early in the game too, there's always those early spring game mistakes and jitters. There's always drop passes. There's always like Bo Nix overthrows.
Exactly.
I think Troy Franklin, right?
Yep.
And even the commentators, I think it was Jordan Kent, was like, well, that's an adrenaline thing. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I think it was the first snap or the first throw pass attempt.
First snap for Green. Yeah.
What was I going with that? But yeah, once he kind of settled down, he made some good plays and he was throwing the ball downfield and looked like he kind of had control of the line of scrimmage, which is something that we haven't really seen from him at all, even in like prior spring games or anything like that. But it was the inaccuracies on the screen passes that are the biggest red flag for me. Mm-hmm. And we even saw some of them in the second half where one to Trayshawn Holden, where I think he could have got probably 15, 20 yards on the sideline and he kind of made him like reach for it. And I think he dropped it. Holden had a bad day catching the ball, but
bad day with his hands. Yeah.
When he did catch it, he was exciting though. He was one of the more exciting players on the field. So that was cool.
You know, it's funny. I was sitting on the yellow team sideline and Ty at some point during the second quarter was just over there, just kind of like throwing these little 3 to 5 yard fade passes, just trying to get like that touch, just getting it over the shoulder. And the first couple he threw were, you know, the receiver was even on those passes, having to turn and kind of come back to it a little bit. But then after that, he threw just 15 straight, just boom, 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 just right in the pocket. And I know that's only 3 to 5 yards, but still, like, throwing the perfect fade and getting the perfect touch on it, something like that. So I just think he kind of got more into the flow. And like you said, having him display that confidence and the command of the offensive line, I think that was really, really impressive. So just some hope, just some glimmers of hope there, some good things, some really good things.
I felt more optimistic about after that performance than I did coming in, which is funny because 7 minutes into the game, I'm like, oh, dude, I do wish we could have seen a little bit more of Novosad, but I do. It was kind of like a reawakening. And I think it was good for Duck fans to be in person for that and really like see that live.
I'm not sure how I feel about Novosad. I'm trying to keep an open mind. I'll just put it that way. I'm trying to keep an open mind. But let's talk about the other quarterback, the quarterback that everybody wants to hear about, Mr. Bo Nix. The big question here and the quote unquote controversy is staying in the game the whole time. How did you feel about that?
It was interesting. My favorite thing was that, every so often the commentators would just say, oh, this is about the last time we're going to see him. Like they kept in the TV broadcast. They just kept saying he was coming out and he never did. Yep. It was just funny that they also never mentioned that they were just like completely whiffing on that take. It was interesting. I was kind of thinking about it a lot, obviously, because I was laughing with the commentators, and I kind of came away with this, that I think that when Dan Lanning saw the atmosphere, something that we talked about last week on the podcast, and the way the game was kind of close and the fans and the way like shout was going and everything, he was like, you know what, like let's not make this. Yeah. I mean, they Jordan Kent said like most teams in the Pac-12 would love to have that attendance and that atmosphere at a regular season game. And that was a game in April.
Yep.
And I think even Bo and I think Dan were kind of like, you know, let's do this. Let's make this kind of a show. Let's throw the ball downfield. Nobody's really, I mean, there were some big hits in the game, but they were doing a good job of taking care of the quarterbacks. And they were like, I think let's just throw the ball and let's have this be a little bit more fun. We got this atmosphere. We have all-time recruits in here. And I think that it was one of the all-time best spring game atmospheres I've seen.
It was my brother, James, his first ever time in Autzen, and he walked out saying that was a spring game.
Right.
Like he was really blown away by the whole environment and everything, and shout was awesome and everything like that. I think Dan Lanning's telling the truth. I think this was the plan the whole time. I think he wanted to play football. I think he wanted, you know, one team to win, one team to lose. I think he wanted that to be very, very kind of set in stone, if you will, because I mean, he kind of talked about it even the three practices leading up to the spring game. He had the teams completely split apart into green and yellow, and they were competing on every opportunity that they could possibly get. And every opportunity that he had, he mentioned physicality. He mentioned he wanted the pads popping. He mentioned he wanted competition. So I think that there's some truth to the fact that he wanted Bo in there to feel that kind of the late game thing. I mean, that's where they, you know, kept pushing it with Ty Thompson, where he got that touchdown there to kind of end the game to make it look a little bit closer than it really was. But it was, I think he wanted the competition. I think this was maybe not the plan for him to play the entire game, but I think it was always going to be him deep into the fourth quarter.
I mean, the yellow team did have a lead in the second half. I mean, with the team with Ty Thompson at quarterback was winning. So, I mean, make of that what you will.
I made a lot of it, Shane.
I try not to take too much away from these games. But, you know, I did think that is definitely a cool way to look at it. And it's something that I guess I'm just not used to in the spring football atmosphere, that to just approach it like, yeah, we're going to have our own little like mini season here, you know, our little like team Super Bowl. And it is a more of an iron sharpening iron moment than, because I mean, before when they, with all the different iterations of the spring game that we've seen, I kind of like just the running clock, whatever, like let's, you know, don't touch the quarterback. They're probably going to call more PIs than not. Let's throw the ball downfield. Like, yeah, you know, make the quarterback. Cause I did feel like there was one point when I was noticing like Lanning on the field and he's talking with the officials, and you know, a lot of being a quarterback's about confidence, right? I think so. Like the commentators were like, that was pass interference. And then Dan was like, yo, let's come on. Like let's move the rock downfield a little bit. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm with it. And with your iron sharpening iron conversation. I think that was nowhere more apparent than this secondary versus the wide receivers. I think this Oregon secondary looks to be much improved. I loved what I saw from Kyrie Jackson. That kid looks like someone that, I mean, he was talking that talk even during a spring game. He was popping pads. Cole Martin had himself a day out there. Not quite the showing. You know, I don't think Dante Manning came out as the number one cornerback. You know, that future headline that I kind of predicted. I think Kyrie Jackson kind of stole a little bit of that limelight from him with his physicality. But what did you see from that Duck secondary, Shane?
Cole Martin was the player that I was most impressed with.
Yeah, yeah, really, really, really impressive.
His athleticism and just his explosiveness, ball hawking, and even on that punt return that he was kind of like a sham punt return because it was, I don't know if he was supposed to do that. And then they just kind of like ruled him down after like he ran like 40 yards, which is also interesting. But yeah, it seems like he's just one of those addicted to football kind of players, and his whole history with his dad and growing up around football and these college programs and really wanting to go to the U of O and all of that. And then the other one was the kid from South Eugene. I can't remember his name. Bocher?
Oh, Bryce Boecher or Boecher. Boecher, whatever however you say. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the kid who pulled the double. Yeah, went and played baseball right after this. Didn't get in the game, but he did go play.
Yeah, and those are two performances that I don't know are going to be – I don't know if they're going to translate to the regular season. We usually have a couple of these guys in the spring game who are going way harder than the rest of the people, and I don't know if it's because they know this is their time to shine or, you know, they're really trying to impress the coaches and the fans now so that, you know, we won't talk shit about them on Twitter. I don't know. But also sometimes, you know, Marcus Mariota, we were like, is this guy ever going to be even a starter after his spring game performance? And look where we are now. So yeah, you never know.
I think another one of those players that showed a lot of potential is Kenyon Sadiq. Terrence Ferguson out there. He showed it in the blocking game, showed it with his hands. I was really, really impressed with him being able to step in and maintain and kind of play up to the level of physicality that was happening in that spring game.
Yeah, I had those two names written down as like my two favorites from the day were Kenyon Sadiq and Cole Martin.
Yep, absolutely. Really, really impressive. Another thing that I just want to touch on here, just want to say, kicking game looks to be in good hands. Camden Lewis, Dunn, however you say that last name, he was definitely the better punter of the day. And Camden looked to have things pretty locked down there from the field goal spot too. So I really liked what I saw from the kicking game.
The consistency that punter was getting on the backspin and then just kind of like that delayed kicking release too. Mm-hmm. They did. I mean, I could see that getting problematic in certain situations, but also like what a weapon at also times letting everybody get downfield like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Anything, any other topics that you want to kind of bring in or any other just bigger ideas from the spring game that you want to touch on?
Evan Williams, I thought looked really good at times. Mm-hmm. I think he's just ridiculously fast, and I didn't really pick it up on watching his tape from Fresno State, which is incredibly long arms. And he has that, a body kind of reminiscent of, that linebacker from Clemson, that went to the Cardinals, Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, his name was. Yep.
Just a really long athlete. Looks like he could play a small forward.
Did get juked out of his shoes by Tez Johnson on that touchdown. But yes,
yeah,
I think a lot of us would have that happen.
Tez was the other player that I wanted to talk about. Like, boy, what he's going to be so fun to watch in Dan Lanning and this, you know, the screen game that at least
Will
Oregon
Stein offense, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. I was playing with last year. I mean, if it's we did see a lot of like creative screens again in the spring game. That was really fun to watch. A couple of those like roll out and then like bootleg, you know, you got guards pulling all over the place. So yeah, getting him in the ball in space with him, Chris Hudson and Trayshawn. I mean, that's three incredibly explosive receivers. And then we have some other options with more possession. And yeah, I mean, because I mean, Troy Franklin, I look at as more of like you're just your classic wide receiver. Like
I see it as a real, like, it's a basketball room. It's a basketball team, the way they've got that wide receiver kind of, you know, created. You've got your point guards, you've got your wings, you've got your centers, you know, you've got your guys that you can really throw it to up, you know, up tall. So I'm starting to get excited, Shane. I'm starting to get a little excited. I do one last thing I want to touch on. Dante Dowdle, I think is how you say it. The running back, Dowdell.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it on. I was at the game, so I didn't get. I watched a little bit of the game here on TV, but I didn't get a chance to hear him say it. But very, very impressive, very, very impressive. Also, and I think has kind of elevated himself into that conversation to really get some touches as the season rolls around. Okay, Shane, we go from spring game to the NFL draft. The one of the best things of the NFL here in the spring, you know, it's the way they control the media cycle all year round, and they absolutely love to do it. But a couple Ducks had themselves a great day, and let's talk about it here with Gonzo going number 17 to the Patriots. Immediate thoughts. What do you think, Shane?
Kind of a free fall. But it's also like based on what, like mock drafts and like projections from like before last college football season started. And it was really interesting listening to Ryan Russillo's podcast before the draft and talking about like how these mock drafts like dictate how we feel about it. And then even him and Bill Simmons talking about the percentage chance of the player would still be undrafted, and that was like a made up like ESPN thing. So yeah, free fall, whatever. But I mean, it was what I talked about with him going to Philly was if he falls a little bit, going to a good team and an organization that really knows what they're doing could be extremely beneficial for him. And especially young corners, young defensive players, they get so often they go to these bad teams and then they just can kind of get lost in the shuffle of just a bad organization. So New England, I think, is kind of like top three ideal landing spots for him, honestly.
Well, and if nephew Kyle from Bill Simmons is any indication of how Patriot fans feel about it, they're very excited because they remember how good Patrick Chung was for them for so long. So bringing in another Oregon DB into Foxborough seems like a good opportunity for him. And this is, I thought he would land there at four. I thought 14 was kind of his, you know, landing where he would fall his absolute furthest. But then the Patriots, you know, traded out of that, but then traded back up to come get him again. So,
well, the ultimate Gonzo. Ultimate Patriot move. They traded back and still got their guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's the old Belichick special.
Yeah. DJ Johnson, the Predator Flock Pod Hall of Famer, goes in the third round, number 80, to the Carolina Panthers. I absolutely love this landing spot for him.
Absolutely.
I think he can do a lot of damage there. And I think as long as, again, they seem to have a real good sense of talent evaluation at that defensive end spot, but they haven't gotten the kind of production necessary out of it. So I'm curious to see what they're able to do with him and how they're able to develop him, but they need sacks. They need sacks desperately, almost as bad as Atlanta.
That was I can't remember being that excited at like watching an NFL draft for a player. Like Herbert, we knew he was going to go in that top spot. Like Mariota, the same kind of thing. D'Amador Lenore was one where I was like, oh, that was cool that he went in that spot. But then I was like kind of pissed that he went to the 49ers.
Exactly. That was a tough one. Yeah, that was a tough one.
So, but there was another pick in this draft that we'll talk about later that I was equally made like a like audible sound. But this, I thought, you know, I'm a huge DJ Johnson fan. He went sooner than I thought he would. I thought he was going to get lost in the shuffle of all these edge players and these hybrid, you know, defensive end linebacker guys, but I'm so glad that his potential, you know, really shines through, and you know, that athleticism, I think he's going to be not an immediate impact guy, but I think he's going to get playing time in his first season, which is exciting.
Well, it's crazy. We'll move on here to the next guy and just kind of segue this in. If you would have told me a year ago that DJ Johnson was going to get drafted before Noah Sewell, I'd slap you across the face.
Right.
You
know? Exactly.
And so
exactly.
I mean, it's a combination of things. It's Noah falling and it's DJ rising, but I think it's still pretty surprising. So having Noah fall to the fifth round here at number 148 to the Bears, I like this landing spot for him. I think, again, he gives him an opportunity to play in the cold and in the NFC where they do still run the ball quite a bit up there. The trenches are still important. But, again, they're going to have to protect him. They're going to have to put him in positions to succeed, almost, you know, like a – he's going to have to be probably a first and second down player, not much on the third down level.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for similar reasons of him, I wanted him to go to Detroit also to play with his brother, but I wanted him in that division where now Aaron Rodgers is out of it. You're looking around, there's Love, Goff, Fields, and What's the other even NFC North team?
Cousins.
Oh, Cousins. Yeah. I mean, like,
forgettable. It's understandable to forget about Cousins. He may not be there for much longer either. There's a lot of smoke around that.
Yeah. And then you never know who, you know, who would be the next up there in Minnesota. So just, and with all the deficiencies that we talked about with him in the passing game, to go in division, that's going to be a little bit more run heavy with the bad weather and all that. And the subpar quarterback play, you're not going to have to go up against Mahomes twice a year or something like that. That would probably play somebody like off the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to be a run stopper. He's going to be out there on running downs, but I do think it's a good landing spot for him.
It's like pedigree of linebacker play in Chicago as well. Yeah.
We've got Big Sala going in the sixth round, number 199. We've got Jordan Riley going number 243 to the Giants. We didn't talk about in the last one. I don't think a lot of people had him getting drafted, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then Alex Forsyth going number 257 to the Broncos. Of those three, which landing spot do you like the most?
Oh, Big Sala.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was the other one that I really didn't think. He was the one player that I – him and Forsyth, but I mean, Forsyth, what a great story for that guy. But Big Sala, I've just always been so drawn to, just because he's, no offense, Alex, he's more fun to watch than you. And offensive linemen are, it's rare to have like an offensive lineman that you're like really like, you know, your eyes are glued to. But
you're
like,
not wrong.
When you get down, just downfield with the hair and the size and the speed and with, you know, everything that Baltimore has kind of built, and then bringing Lamar Jackson back. Now they got Odell. The Ravens are my favorite AFC team. I've always liked their uniforms back to their early days, and just their whole kind of their identity that they've had for, you know, most of my life. Or are you making a stink
purple
face?
Man? Oh, it's too much purple. I like purple. I mean, I love Lamar, but too much purple for me. But I'm with you. Big Sala is like when you would create an offensive tackle recruit on NCAA football. That's like basically the player that you would create, this like just freak of nature that can run downhill. I like Forsyth landing with the Broncos. I do think as long as he can stay healthy, I think he could be a contributor there, and they need all the help they can get up there in Denver. So let's ride. All right. Favorite UDFA landing spot. We've got Bennett Williams to the Dolphins, Chase Cota to the Lions, and TJ Bass to the Cowboys.
I got to go Bennett Williams to the Oregon secondary of Oregon the Miami South. Dolphins. Yeah. Now with Rome McKinley, Javon Holland, and now Bennett Williams, you know, I really hope he makes the roster there. I think he can. I think that we talked about it a lot. He took a lot of shit that I don't think he necessarily deserved. Yeah. Some, you know, big plays and big games last year. It's unfortunate, but I don't think that's a representation of him as a player. And I think he's going to be a better pro than people realize.
I really like Chase Cota to the Lions. I know everybody here knows we play a little fantasy football, and he's going to be a guy that just gonna kind of keep an eye on, because if he makes that roster and is kind of one of their, you know, a deep wide receiver on that team, he might be a sleeper, might be a very, very deep sleeper in that dynasty league that I'm in. So I kind of like his landing spot there, and having a good old Jared Goff thrown it to him. All right. Any other big takeaways here from the NFL draft before we move on?
It was just so much more successful than I think you and I anticipated. When we did our draft preview, we really didn't want to expand it out to too many players. We were maybe a little guilty of doing that before, of doing like full breakdowns and predictions for every player that possibly could have been taken. And then we sit there and watch the draft and realize that only two or three guys were going off the board. It's cool to see, you know, a couple of those offensive linemen get that recognition and also get drafted. And then, you know, those guys getting picked up also who didn't get drafted. Just that haul of players, which also probably could have had a couple more Oregon Ducks in it had they decided to take their talents to the NFL. Brandon Dorlus, Bo Nix, just being two off the top of my head. That's a good chunk of guys going to the NFL.
Absolutely. Well, and I want to bring this up too. Cooper Petania on the Football Recruiting Podcast on 24/7 was talking about, you know, how Georgia and Alabama really led the way this year, you know, with NFL draft picks. But he says, you know who else has got that recipe? And in like 2 to 3 years, they'll be in that conversation for who leads the NFL draft. Dan Lanning in Oregon. End quote. So, I mean, that's some pretty high praise. And I think it is a possibility with all the talent that he is bringing in here and the way that they are turning into the NFL factory of the West. So love yeah. to see that.
Dan Lanning seems to be following the footsteps of all those, like, kind of like Kirby Smart, pre-putting his foot in his mouth, Dabo Sweeney, where, you know, like, just all like the buzz and momentum building around him. And as long as he just kind of keeps up what he's doing, I mean, and that, you know, I talked about before, the environment in that spring game, like him with all those former players and just like the camaraderie that he has with guys that he didn't even coach.
Yep.
I found to be really impressive. So let's just, you know, knock on wood that he doesn't do anything crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Let's praise that he is a good human, but it's interesting, you know, there's been a lot of success for Oregon coaches in their second year here at the University of Oregon. Two coaches in particular went to the national championship game in their second season. So maybe time for another crazy Coach Justin D prediction. Those don't go very well. Hey, easy. We'll see what happens. All right. Moving on, we do want to do a little diamond check-in here just real quick. Unfortunately, neither Shane and I have had a chance to make it out and watch either of these teams in person. I did catch a little bit of the baseball team on TV the other day, which was kind of nice. Duck baseball ranked right now as high as number 10 in the latest polls. They are 30-13, 13-8 in conference. They got a little Platypus Cup action happening today, Tuesday, in Corvallis at 5:30, and then head down to USC for three games against the Trojans this weekend. And then Duck softball ranked as high as number 13, and they've been on a 13-game winning streak, taking their record to 35-11 overall, 14-7 in conference. They host Utah this weekend, and this is the main reason why I wanted to talk about any diamond stuff. They're hosting a Bark in the Park at the Jane on Saturday. So if you want to take your dog, check out the Flock Pod Instagram. I posted a little link to, or not a link, but a little, you know, information thing on it. Kind of been giving you some more information. But if you want to take your pup out to the ballpark, that is your opportunity. Any thoughts on either of these diamond teams here, Shane?
No, it's cool to see the continued success. I did talk to somebody the other day who went up to Corvallis and watched some of the prior matchup against the Beavs and said all time, like, cool sports atmosphere in Corvallis for that matchup there. And apparently we'd kind of talked about, you know, the potential budding rivalry between these two schools. They feel that in Corvallis. They said that they were up more than they had been, you know, the crowd, you know, was up more for that game than they had been in prior years. So
yep.
I think being kind of a down year in Corvallis for that team and up year for Oregon is feeding into a little bit of a budding rivalry. Well, I mean, you know, it's already a rivalry built in between the schools, but something that we might be a little bit more prominent in the off mainstream podcast world.
Well, and it's tough because, I mean, you say a down year and they're ranked number 15 in the country. So, I mean, it's just when it's they're a really, really good program. I will give the Beavers props when it's deserved. It's kind of like, you know, baseball is kind of like football right now where, I mean, that Beaver team looks pretty damn good right now on the Pigskin side. I'm worried about that game. But yeah, it's kind of like that kind of a dynamic where one team has definitely been a lot more dominant and had more national success. So, all right, let's go ahead and move on to the end here. Good old last take. Shane, what do you got?
I don't got anything, actually.
Nothing. All right.
No, yeah.
I'll
just pass the baton to you on this one.
Yeah, I got something. So, you know, I haven't experienced my Seahawks picking up high in the NFL draft all that recently. So Thursday evening was a real roller coaster of emotions for me. I'm sure this is no surprise to you, but I really convinced myself that Anthony Richardson was going to fall to 5 and he was going to be a Seahawk. And just the dreams,
you're going to talk yourself into that one.
The dream was going to be a reality. I was going to be online, like, in the next second, ordering an Anthony Richardson jersey. We were going to be all in, Shane. We're going to be all in. And I didn't realize how actually emotionally invested I was into that as an expectation, because when I tell you I had a physical and emotional reaction to the Colts picking Anthony Richardson at 4, It was to the point where Mika was kind of giving me side eye, kind of looking at me like, are you okay? Like, I was screaming at the TV. I was yelling. I was like, no, I was punching the air. I was very upset, Shane. I had to get up and kind of take a walk around the house. Almost took a walk around the block. I mean, it almost ruined the whole damn day. But, you know, I watched some Devin Witherspoon film. You know, I've kind of calmed down a little bit. You know, I think I've listened to the Pete Carroll sound bites where he compares him to Troy Polamalu. So for Pete to say that, and I mean, we all know that Petey is Mr. Petey Sunshine. But for him to say that, that's exciting. I mean, I'm not going to go buy a Witherspoon jersey right now like I would have if it was a Richardson pick. But getting to the whole take here of the situation, I think Anthony Richardson's going to be the offensive rookie of the year.
Oh, wow.
Because I think he's going to start, and I think he's going to do enough with his legs, with that Jonathan Taylor backfield. They've got some decent weapons out there. I mean, Pittman is somebody that can help with accuracy concerns because of his wide catch radius. I kind of like it. I kind of like it. So, yeah, that's my take here, is that Anthony Richardson will be offensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he is going into, I'd say, a better situation for next year than C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. I don't know. Bryce Young might be in a better situation, but I don't know if he's going to be a better, like, day one pro. No, Anthony Richardson's, like, a big physical dude.
It's going to be Richardson or Bijan Robinson. It would be who I would money on.
I don't like the Bijan Robinson landing spot. I just think Atlanta, like, just grabs, like, even like the Kyle Pitts thing. It's like they're not building anything. They're just like grabbing these players that like seem like the best available. And I was just kind of bummed because I wanted Bijan Robinson to go to a team that was fun and like that we might get to see him do cool shit. And I think Atlanta, we're just gonna see him go, like, he'll get like featured a lot. He's gonna get drafted, he'll be in Gopher Fantasy Leagues for like $16 or something.
Oh, he'll go for In our triple crown league, I bet he'll go for 30 plus.
And see, that's insane. I think that's such a mistake. I think he screams like 18 carries, 28 yards, 4 receptions, 12 yards.
Oh, wow. Well, just maybe like in that offense. Yeah, you might be right with Desmond Ridder throwing in the ball, but I think he's special. I think he is a special talent. So maybe he can overcome some of that. And boy, is he charismatic. My goodness, watching him on the draft, he was just an intoxicating fellow. So good for the Atlanta Falcons getting a guy like that in the locker room.
A running back going later in the draft that I was pretty upset about just because of how good of a pick it was your Seahawks getting
Charbonnet.
Yeah, Cabernet.
Yeah. And
like wine, man. And adding, he's like the perfect Seattle running back, physical, big body.
Compliment to Kenneth Walker. Yeah,
he's gonna fit right in with all those other guys, whichever ones stick around. Because isn't DJ Davis and not DJ Davis? Who's the other one?
Rashad Penny's out the door. And then
there's another
Travis
one, though.
Homer. I don't think Travis Homer's coming back because they drafted another kid late in the draft, like a more of a pass catching running back, but I can't remember his name now. Yeah, I love the Seahawks draft overall. How do you feel about the Rams draft?
It is what it is.
Draft is always that way for the Rams, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The picks weren't great. I thought they did that, you know, filled a lot of holes. There's a lot of holes to fill. I do think the Rams are going to be better than people think next year just because there were so many injuries last year. And I think Aaron Donald and Cooper Kupp were kind of like, you know, I mean, Cooper Kupp, they both kept playing, but it was like, what are we really doing here? Stafford elbow was all bunk. So Stetson Bennett, I thought was a cool, like, pickup though.
Is he the same age as Matthew Stafford?
Right. Yeah. And people were like giving me shit about that. They're like, oh, but I'm like, yeah, I don't know. That's like pretty. We had Baker Mayfield last year. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
No, for sure. It's worth a solid backup. I think he's a solid backup and he can step in when necessary. So, all right, Shane, I think we've reached that time. As always, take care of your chicken. Take care of your mentals. We appreciate you. We love you. We out.
No bones, I give.
Sorry.
You want?
wanna shout. Kick my heels up and shout. Throw my hands up and shout. Throw my head back and shout. Come on now, don't forget to say you real. Don't forget to say yeah.
Say you will.
Say it right now, baby.
Say you will.
Come on,
say you will.
Say that you will.
Say you will.
Say that you love me.
Say
that you need me.
Say
that you want me.
Say
you wanna please me.
Say
come on now.
Say
come on now.
Say
come on now.
Say
I want you to know. You know you make me wanna
shout.
Lift my head up and
shout.
Throw my hands back and
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
A little bit softer 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 now,
shout.
A little bit louder 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 now,
shout.
You know you make me wanna
shout.
Lift my head up and
shout.
Throw my hands back and
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
A little bit softer now,
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 shout.
A little bit louder.